Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam. So, who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Pelizzolo back here with Sam Monson. And as promised, Cousin Doug is here.
Cousin Doug.
That's right. Doug Kide, one of the latest, newest members of PFF. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Cousin Steve and Cousin Sam.
Well, that's a lie now. You and I are legitimate cousins-in-law by marriage, all right? And Doug, Sam is not.
Difference between Cousin Doug and Cousin Steve and Cousin Sam, pretty minor. That's how minimal the actual connection is.
We're all cousins somewhere along the line. But yeah, Doug, as I mentioned on the last show, of course, my wife's stepmom's cousin's daughter's husband is Doug, right? Yes. I don't think I missed any of those degrees of separation, right?
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
That would be a shame.
When it's said that fast, it kind of, you know, puts your mind into a pretzel. But yeah, I believe you got that perfect.
Listen to us.
Second cousins-in-law.
Yeah, second cousins-in-law. So anyway, we're happy to have Doug here. And your official title, Doug, is National NFL Reporter. Give us a little background on what you were doing before and then how you ended up here at PFF.
For sure. Yeah, I was covering the Patriots for 8 years at NESN. Got out of that grind of Bill Belichick press conferences and everything like that, and took on this national role at PFF. And I'm really excited about it, really happy about it. I actually watched a Bill Belichick press conference this morning, like out of habit. And the only thing I was really thinking was, kind of glad I'm not there. Kind of glad I don't have to do this every day anymore. You know,
you have to like make something up to write about, you know, him saying nothing essentially. Is that?
Yeah, he seemed particularly unhelpful this morning, which are those days that, you really start to question your sanity.
So anyway, you went all across various training camps, right? So you went all across the country, and I want to get into some of the stuff that you saw, that you learned and everything. So let's start with Matthew Stafford and the Rams. I know you made that West Coast trip. We've talked about Stafford a ton here and the Rams, and there's a lot of hype out there. What's the feeling in the building with the Rams? How do they feel about having Stafford versus Goff and the excitement level out there?
It is interesting because I went into LA, you know, kind of wondering what the hype level for Matthew Stafford would be. And, I was a little bit hesitant about it. I wasn't sure how you'd fit into that system, but it really seems like everything that I was hearing there in LA is that they are extremely excited about Matthew Stafford. And that's just beyond everything that he brings physically with his arm strength. They were really happy with what he brings mentally. They said that he learned that system, that Rams offensive system, extremely quickly. Now he's teaching other guys the system at this point. And that's very difficult. The Sean McVay offense is a lot more complicated than what Matthew Stafford had been running in Detroit. So I think that there might've even been some questions when they brought him in to LA about how quickly he would adapt, but it really seems like he's adapting extremely quickly. And like I said, the hype is really high in the building for Matthew Stafford. So everything that you were kind of hearing after they made that trade that, yeah, Matthew Stafford could jump into that upper echelon of quarterbacks, that's what they're seeing and that's what they're feeling. So really good vibes there in LA about Matthew Stafford.
Did you get any kind of indication from them? Like, what is it that sold them on Stafford? What is it they're looking for Stafford to bring? Because it's not just as simple as he's a better quarterback than Jared Goff, right? There are specific things that they covet in Matthew Stafford, which they think makes it worth the giant trade that it took to get him, as opposed to just the scale of upgrade that they got.
I think it really is simply that he can do things that other quarterbacks can't. I know how simple that sounds, but it's really kind of opened up their offense a little bit with the arm strength that he has, with everything that he can process at the line of scrimmage. I think that they're just like I said, it's allowed them to open up their offense a little bit more. And he had a lot of downfield threats in Detroit, and you're starting to see, you know, the Rams maybe bringing some downfield threats as well this season. DeSean Jackson, all the things I heard about him are good in LA as well. I'm not sure if he'll actually be a full-time player with the Rams. He might be sharing that number three role with Van Jefferson, but I think it really does just break down to the tools that Matthew Stafford can bring. And that just allows the Rams to do more in their offense because of who they have at quarterback.
Now, that makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, if you're Sean McVay and you're that coaching staff, you've got the great Zach Robinson out there as well. You're sitting there very confident in what you've done with the Rams, right? You're confident in what you've done offensively since 2017. You know what Jared Goff's skill set is. It's easy for them to view it through that lens, right? We always talk about this, Sam, the can do, the quarterback, what can he do? And we also always mention the things that Stafford can do are ridiculous and incredibly at that. No, I mean, it's one throw, but the no look throw that he had last year, I think it was against the Titans in the end zone. He does that, right? He has that ability. So the Rams really looked at this and said, we did all this with Jared Goff. Therefore we can do that much more with Matthew Stafford.
It's a weird situation where they're actually specifically targeting that, right? The idea of a can do player, because in part there's this idea which is magnified. I think this happens in the draft generally, but it's magnified with this offense that this system, my offense, will make this guy look better on a down-to-down basis. Like his baseline will improve. And what we really want is the guy that can do some of the things that the current guy can't. So, and there is definitely evidence that is the case. When you look at when Seth Galina came on the pod, he was breaking down some of the data points that show that. But another one is, if you just look at grade or PFF grade on any throw that went beyond the first read for the last couple of years, and also on big time throw rate as well, the last couple of years, Stafford is number one in big time throw rate on throws beyond his first read. Goff was 30th. So you're going from literally one end of the extreme to the other. And even though the sort of the first read stuff, the initial baseline is not necessarily that much different, that's in two completely different offenses. So McVay and the Rams are looking at that and saying, well, we will change that baseline. And what we really need is the other thing, is the thing that Goff just couldn't do. And that is worth the two first round picks to us.
Doug, did you get any vibes on the defense? Cause that's as big of a question with the Rams as well, you know, with Brandon Staley moving on and Raheem Morris taking over. Same defense, same concepts, and how that transition's going.
They are trying to make it as seamless as possible, it seems like, from Brandon Staley to Raheem Morris. I'm questioning a little bit exactly what they're doing there on defense, because when I was down there, Jalen Ramsey was in the slot the entire practice. I'm not sure if that has continued on as the summer has progressed, but that made me wonder if that was the best course of action for the Rams, because he might be the best slot cornerback that they have on the roster. He might be better in that role than, you know, guys like Darius Williams and David Long, but are you taking one of the best outside cornerbacks in the NFL and hurting yourselves by moving him inside? And it's also a question about value there too, where Jalen Ramsey is the highest paid cornerback in the NFL. Is it worth putting him in there in the slot when slot cornerbacks typically make about $7 or $8 million a year? So very curious to see what they do there at cornerback. And when I was there, that was the day that Hunter Renfrow was burning Jalen Ramsey out of the slot. And maybe in those situations where you've got that small shifty guy, they don't put Jalen Ramsey in the slot as much. Maybe they're just giving him that experience in the slot for when they do need him there. But that was really the one thing that made me wonder, a little bit about what they were doing there in LA, just seeing him in the slot so heavily and seeing him struggle a little bit against a player who's good like Hunter Renfrow, but certainly isn't one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
Well, you can be a final arbiter on that, because Jalen Ramsey came out after all those reports and said, you know, he'd watch the tape again, didn't see any of these plays where he was burned. And it's obviously just people not understanding zone coverage. So what, which is it? Is Jalen trying to save face, or was he actually burned?
I think that he was trying to save face to a certain extent. There was a deep completion to Hunter Renfrow where it certainly looked like he beat Jalen Ramsey. If it was zone coverage rather than man coverage, like Jalen Ramsey is saying, it's possible. Did not particularly look like it. that way to me. But there was another play too, where Hunter Renfro actually went up and caught a jump ball over Jalen Ramsey, which Jalen Ramsey actually kind of acknowledged after the practice that, yeah, he got one on me. I also, there was some video that came out. I actually had it on my phone. I wasn't sure if it was allowed to be posted or not, but there was another play where Hunter Renfro really beat Jalen Ramsey off the snap, put a double move on him and was running free into the end zone. Derek Carr actually overthrew Hunter Renfro on the play. So it didn't go for a completion, but you definitely saw that Jalen Ramsey was struggling a little bit with the quickness of a player like Hunter Renfro. And I mean, that's to be expected. Jalen Ramsey is a big cornerback. He's been a really good outside cornerback. He's been pretty good from the slot, you know, in his career. But when you look at him, you think, okay, that's a really good boundary cornerback rather than a really good slot cornerback.
It's definitely something to monitor. And Ramsey came out and was kind of coy about, oh, I can't wait until they unleash my new role in this new defense. And I don't know if that's going to be a part of it, but that when you get burnt deep, and it's 0-for-1, you know, we have the battles with fans all the time, right? That's going to be bad PFF grade, but it shows up as 0-for-1 in the stats. Ramsey actually had a couple of those. He was great last year, but he had a couple of those last year against DK Metcalf, where he got torched deep and then Russ missed him. I do want to talk about the Raiders and their receivers as well beyond Hunter Renfro. But first, a reminder, the fantasy football draft season is upon us. And Doug, you'll love this. It's time to put the PP back in PPR league with the sponsors of today's show. It's Manscaped. Not uncomfortable at all here, Doug. We have fun with this. They're the leaders in below the waist grooming, and they just launched their new performance package 4.0. Don't neglect your balls like the Packers front office neglected Aaron Rodgers. Remember, don't forget. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for kickoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the promo code PFF. Inside the performance package 4.0, you'll find the lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, the Crop Reviver Toner, and the Performance Boxer Briefs, and of course, Sam's favorite, the Travel Bag. So it's 20% off. Free shipping as well with the promo code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the promo code PFF at manscaped.com. Of course, if your significant other is nagging you about how much time you put into your fantasy team, you might as well gift them with beautiful balls with Manscaped. Perfect segue to the Raiders.
Yeah.
Smooth.
What? It feels like there's a missing, like there's meat on the bone left there, so to speak, between the performance package. There's a pun there that hasn't been used, is what I'm saying. Like the Manscaped, the creative people, the guys writing the script, performance package. I mean, come on, that pun writes itself, and it's not in the read.
Maybe I need to emphasize it differently. Performance package.
Maybe 4.0. You're saying it's already there, and you're just not.
Plus, PFF is performance and Manscaped as package.
I mean, maybe you should give them some feedback.
Like, yeah, I'll send back.
Guys, this read is outstanding, but I have an extra pun that would add even more to it.
It's not a read, Sam. It's all natural. Those are my natural thoughts.
When I say read, I meant organic product
completely
placement
organic
of a thing you really
organic
love.
Organic product placement of a thing I love. Thank you so much. That's how we do it here. Manscaped.com. Promo code's PFF, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Go check it out. Raiders camp, Doug. Were you buying into all the hype? You got Bryan Edwards is what, a combination of T.O. plus Randy Moss. Big questions about Henry Ruggs. And of course, Hunter Renfro apparently just keeps getting open.
Yeah, it was interesting. While I was down there, I wanted to get a gauge on what the rest of the team was feeling about Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs and all these wide receivers, because John Gruden did a fantastic job of hyping up Bryan Edwards as the next T.O. And then I think, another Raiders beat reporter said, actually, he's a little bit more like Randy Moss, which was incredible. The sense around the team outside of John Gruden is like, okay, let's hold on. Let's actually wait to see this in a game, because that's really something that Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs haven't done a whole lot of at this point. But they are certainly going all in on those young wide receivers. You throw Hunter Renfro in there as well. I had a good sense that Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards were going to be the starters this year with Hunter Renfro, and that John Brown would be on the outside looking in. Wasn't quite sure if he was going to get released or not, but that, you know, wound up bearing itself out, that John Brown was released from that team, that they're rolling with those guys, Zay Jones, Willie Snead. But still, you have to see it in a game from Bryan Edwards. And maybe it was just that John Gruden thought that, you know, Bryan Edwards looks like T.O., but in the practice that I was down there for, he didn't make many plays. Henry Ruggs did have a big long completion, but I don't know. There's a lot of hype there, but not a lot of substance so far. So really curious to see how those guys actually do once the lights come on and the regular season actually matters.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot with the Raiders. I mean, look, Gruden and those guys, they've done a good job with the offense. So yeah, I mean, it's a big question mark with those receivers. I mean, you can, if you defer to the track record of they had a good offense last year, they turned Nelson Agholor into one of the best deep threats in the NFL. Let's just say we give the Raiders, they'll figure that out offensively with Ruggs and with Edwards and that trio there. But again, it's like I asked about the Rams, like what happens defensively with the Raiders here? It's a massive question mark. That is the one place where they have not gotten better year over year. Gus Bradley comes in running that system. Did you get a sense of any optimism on that side of the ball after 3 years of being one of the league's worst?
You know what? The Raiders actually performed pretty well in that practice. I think they had, you know, two or three interceptions against Matthew Stafford. A couple of those were tip passes, but you know, I think that they really are pushing Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs so much because they need those draft picks to actually hit, because a lot of the defensive draft picks at this point have not hit. We just saw Tanner Muse cut a third round pick from last season, signed to the Seahawks practice squad. Even a guy on offense, Lynn Bowden, he only lasted a few months there with Las Vegas. And then some recent high picks as well, who aren't starting on their offense, like Damon Arnett, defensive end, Cleveland Farrell. There's a lot of things that they need to figure out draft wise. And if guys like Damon Arnett and Farrell were performing better, then I think that we would look at that Raiders defense as being in better shape, or even a guy like Tanner Muse who they just cut. So yeah, that's where the biggest questions arise. It's not a great sign that they're bringing in KJ right before the season, that he'll probably have to slot in as a starter. They're going to be without one of their cornerbacks for a suspension to start off the season. So it looks like rookie Nate Hobbs will be starting in the slot there. So definitely a lot of questions, a lot of things to figure out for the Raiders on defense, but that's a wait and see. I don't think it's nearly, they aren't even pumping themselves up as optimistically as they are on offense at this point.
What kind of impression did you get about the sort of step that Henry Ruggs has taken between year one and year two? And is it a risk to grant John Brown the release that he was looking for? Because in the offseason, that looked like a fantastic piece of contingency planning, you know, an insurance policy that, hey, look, we would love Henry Ruggs to step in to all those targets that Nelson Agholor was getting deep down the field. But if he can't, here we can pivot to John Brown, who's got this long proven history of being effective in that role. Then, you know, John Brown sees, as you said, the writing on the wall, asked for a release, and they let him go. So now it's all on Ruggs.
I think there's a risk there. I from the feeling that I was getting there, just from talking to as many, you know, people who are connected to the Raiders as possible, there wasn't a whole lot of confidence involving Henry Ruggs. And there was a direct comparison made between what they'd seen from Jerry Jeudy at that point to what they were seeing on the field, on the practice field every day from Henry Ruggs. And it was just that he didn't have that same level of confidence once he got up to the line of scrimmage, that there wasn't that same confidence that he could beat, you know, press coverage, that he could get off the line in a forceful way. So that's the biggest thing. He's an undersized player. He's a deep threat, but he's a really fast player who, if I remember correctly, at Alabama really wasn't used that much as a deep threat. So they're kind of taking those raw tools. They're trying to hope that 40-yard dash and all that speed, that world-class speed, can translate into him being a really good deep threat. But he has to do everything else involved with the wide receiver position before they get to that point. So we'll see if it's improved by the time the season starts. We'll see if it improves as the season goes along. But the confidence was really what I was hearing that they had some concerns about just that at that point in training camp, which is probably not the greatest thing that you want to see from the first wide receiver taken in last year's draft. Got a lot of tools there, but you have to wonder if they took a more limited player than guys like Jerry Jeudy and guys like CeeDee Lamb that went a little bit later.
That was the debate at the time, right? I mean, look, Justin Jefferson last year ended up being the best of those first round wide receivers. But at the time, it was a fair discussion. CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, two best route runners, most polished. I think there was a fair debate between CeeDee Lamb versus Jerry Jeudy. Who do you prefer? Who do you like the most? And they both looked really good in year one, other than Jerry Judy's drops, right? I mean, they were as advertised as far as route runners, as far as playmakers. And Ruggs was the guy that needed the most work. So did the, I mean, this was always my debate. Did the Raiders go in and say, we just want to develop a guy that looks like Tyreek Hill. We just want to have our own Tyreek Hill, our own take the top off the defense guy. We'll make it work with Ruggs. Or do they actually think that Ruggs was a better all-around receiver than those other guys?
I mean, at least this year, it was a similar debate this year because you have Jaylen Waddle versus Devontae Smith. And at least this year, the people that wanted to make that case could point to that weird subset of plays where Jaylen Waddle had some better numbers than Devontae Smith, and Devontae Smith, you know, 160 pounds. So there are reasons to be sort of scared away from him. But you go back a year before and you make the same discussion between Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs. There's nothing. Like, Henry Ruggs at no point was even close to the level of productivity that Jerry Jeudy had. He's not even close to the level of route runner. He's got speed, and that's about it. Like, that was the entire basis of the decision, is one guy runs a 4.2, the other guy doesn't. Now, you can also say he's also got the ability to go up and high point a ball in a way that, you know, Jeudy might not, but it was such a more difficult sell over Jeudy, let alone CeeDee Lamb, who does have all those things, right? The ability to go up and moss DBs at the same time. It never made any sense whatsoever for him to be the first wide receiver off the board. So if you're the Raiders and you make that declaration, you've got to be right, because look at the receiving group.
My last question on this, right? I mean, when he got drafted, I was asking myself, are the Raiders going to feed Ruggs just to justify this pick, right? Are they going to use 95 jet sweep, you know, tap passes and force the ball down the field? Are they going to use him as a high volume receiver, or just understand he's a speed receiver? Any thoughts on that? Especially because Edwards is a more possession, you know, he's TO, possession type receiver. Any feeling on usage pattern between those two second year receivers?
I think that they'll probably be used pretty similarly. I think that the target shares would probably be pretty even. I think that maybe some of that stems from the fact that John Gruden was hyping up Bryan Edwards so much, but you're looking at them both entering year two, both coming in as starters. It seemed like they were basically hyping both of them just as much as one another coming into this year. So, but I think that there's a significant question, and obviously you guys know this, about just how many targets that both of them will even get in general, because you throw Hunter Renfro in there in the slot, he'll be targeted. Their top targeted player obviously is going to be Darren Waller. Foster Moreau, their other tight end, has got some hype this year. He actually looked pretty good in the practice that I was at. Then you throw the running backs in there as well. Josh Jacobs can be targeted out of the backfield. I think that they really want to use Kenyon Drake as a weapon out of the backfield, someone that might be able to share the field with Josh Jacobs, used out of the slot a little bit, maybe split out wide. I think that they really wanted that weapon out of the backfield and Kenyon Drake. So, I mean, it's a team that's pretty deep as far as offensive playmakers go, when you go two deep at running back and at tight end, three deep at wide receiver. So I don't know. I don't get the sense that they're going to be force feeding the ball to Henry Ruggs. But ultimately, you know, there does come a certain point where a front office has too many misses. And I'm not sure if Mark Davis is going to be the one to make that call that, okay, guys, we've got to start hitting on some players here. But so there was a sense that they were going to force Ruggs and Bryan Edwards into the starting roles, but I really didn't get a great sense that they were going to force them the ball once they're actually on the field. But to save themselves some face, they might want to.
All right, I want to get into the Giants. I know you spent a lot of time over there in New York, but a reminder to fire up your tailgates, because the NFL's back, and get in on the action before opening night kicks off with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. And with the NFL returning, DraftKings is giving all customers the opportunity to participate in this year's no-brainer offer. You heard it on the PFF NFL Daily today, but the DraftKings Sportsbook has moved the spread of the Tampa Bay game to +73 for all customers. Tampa Bay +73. That means you can still cash in as long as the reigning champs don't lose by more than 74 points against Dallas. Seems like it is a no-brainer. If you haven't tried DraftKings yet, don't miss out. DraftKings is giving new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet just $1 or more on any football game here in week one. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFFBET. New customers bet $1 on any football game to receive $200 in free bets instantly with promo code PFFBET. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. Free bet promotion for new customers only. It's a minimum $5 deposit. Max wager limits apply. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9. with it. All right, Doug, I mentioned you were with the Giants quite a bit. So we've got Daniel Jones heads into year three. They've added a ton as far as their playmakers go. Kenny Golladay, draft Kadarius Toney. I want to talk about Toney in a minute too, because it seems like, I mean, it was like 10 days into camp before he caught his first pass. Was that right? It was something ridiculous like that. But the Giants offense, Daniel Jones, his expectations, and what the heck is going to happen with that offensive line?
It's tough. I mean, I think that this is a major prove it year for Daniel Jones, because you know, I was at three practices involving the Giants. There were two joint practices with the Patriots that I went to in New England, and then one in New York. There was a little bit more of a walkthrough, but you just got the sense that, you know, Daniel Jones was missing those wow plays. And that's something that he really hasn't had a lot throughout his NFL career, of just those wow throws. And I know that he was better last season than the stats bear out. And he certainly didn't have a lot of help from his offensive line or from his offensive pass catchers. But I think that this is just a massive year for him, for Dave Gettleman. I think that Joe Judge is going to be safe unless they really absolutely tank. But I do feel like this is a make or break year for Daniel Jones, where he has to show something more than he did last season. And as a rookie, as you mentioned, I think that they will get help from their offensive playmakers. Kenny Golladay should be a big add into that offense. Getting Saquon Barkley back is big, but that offensive line is still in really rough shape. And one thing that I thought was really interesting just involving the Giants is that they wanted Matt Peart to win that right tackle job. It looks like Nate Solder is going to be their right tackle this season, but just the fact that they were willing to keep Nate Solder even on the roster as someone who is competing for a right tackle spot when his cap hit this season is $9.5 million. His salary is $3 million. Usually on most teams that have a solid offensive line, that would be a pretty obvious cut or trade candidate heading into training camp. The fact that they let him carry this out and actually win the job with that high of a salary tells you where they are offensive line wise. They had a few retirements this offseason. They were just bringing guys in there at the end of training camp, trying to fix up that offensive line. I don't think that any of that is really going to work. I think that Daniel Jones is going to be under siege this season. So it could be tough for him to prove it, but you know, he's got some adversity. I think that he has to prove it even through all of that this season.
Yeah. That's the question is, does he even have the chance to prove it given right. the line that's going to be in front of him? It feels like Daniel Jones right now is kind of being set up for a no win type of season. Not as in that the Giants are going to go winless, but there's no way that Daniel Jones can exceed expectations given what's going to be in front of him.
It is tough. If I cut you off there, Steve, but I think that at the very least, I think that you do need to see some of those wow moments from Daniel Jones this season. I think that you just need to see that spark, and then maybe that will carry him on into 2022 and beyond. But if it's more kind of blah play from Daniel Jones there in New York, then maybe they do look to move on after this season. Then maybe Joe Judge can kind of start over fresh with a new quarterback at some point.
The interesting thing about the Solder thing is he hasn't played right tackle since 2011, since his rookie season, when he started out as a swing tackle. So we're talking about Penei Sewell being the number 7 overall pick, and people are like, oh, how are you going to move a left tackle to right tackle? We saw Donald Penn do this a couple of years ago. He was a 8-10 year left tackle. They moved him to the right side. And of course the O-line community is like, well, you definitely don't do it at that point. You definitely don't do it at that point in their career. And then he gets hurt because it is different movement patterns in the whole thing. And Solder, you know, he opted out last year. He didn't have a great 2019. And he's moving to a new position. So it's a risky proposition on paper with Solder at right tackle, Andrew Thomas coming off a rough year at left tackle in the interior, probably even worse than the tackle situation right now. Did you get any sense about Kadarius Toney and where he lands, or do you have anything else on Solder in the line there?
Just on, you know, flipping a guy from left tackle to right tackle real quick, offensive linemen that I've talked to have literally described it as like, okay, try to write with your left hand. And I don't know if it's that bad, because I don't think that I could ever get used to doing something like that. But that's where you're starting off with there, from switching from left tackle to right tackle, is that it really is that much of a switch. Going on to Toney, I don't know if Kadarius Toney actually even practiced when I was on the practice field. He was limited by injury. He was limited by COVID. It seems like he was really slow to come back from both of those things. So I would not expect Kadarius Toney to be a major factor early in the season with the Giants. And it certainly helps that they do have Darius Slayton and Kenny Golladay and Sterling Shepard to kind of ease him into the offense. But he's a guy that I do wonder when he'll actually even see the field, because another guy, you know, not exactly like Henry Ruggs, but kind of an offensive playmaker more than a, you know, really solid, consistent wide receiver at the University of Florida. Great guy to get the ball in his hands. But I think that there would have been a learning curve for him anyway coming into the NFL. And now him having such a slowed down training camp, no preseason, I think it could be a really slow go for Kadarius Toney in that offense.
Yeah, Toney is way behind the eight ball, and the Giants have players that can keep him off, you know, off the field on the sideline if he is slow. I want to get your take on something that I just saw, that the Miami Dolphins voted their team captains, and Tua is not one of them. They have five team captains, and Tua was not one of the five.
Matt Collins is, though, my guy.
Yes, Matt Ryan Collins, Fitzpatrick last year was voted a team captain. So it's
controversy.
Yeah, like, I'm curious, what is your take on this? It's not necessarily, you know, a massive story or a death knell for Tua that he wasn't, but it's certainly noteworthy, I would say, that the starting quarterback was not voted by the team as a captain.
It's definitely a surprise. And when I looked at that list of Dolphins team captains, I actually kind of had to laugh. I mean, it's Jesse Davis, Matt Collins, Jason McCourty, Elandon Roberts, and Clayton, I do not know how to pronounce his name. I should not have set myself up to even try this.
Trust me, Doug, that's what this show's all about. Starts to pronounce a name, realizes it's wrong halfway through, but sometimes you just power through.
Fejdalem? Is that correct?
I think it's Fejdalem.
Fejdalem. I mean, not the highest caliber players on that list there for the Miami Dolphins. You've got a couple of former Patriots on that list. It's a surprise to me. It's a major surprise to me that Tua was not voted a captain. And like you said, it's voted by the team. So this isn't some power play by Brian Flores or anything to do with the coaching staff. They simply viewed Jesse Davis and Matt Collins as being better representatives of the team than Tua Tagovailoa. And I don't think that that's a great sign for Tua. I think that on, you know, 90% of teams, you do see the starting quarterback on that list. Mac Jones was not named a captain for the Patriots, so I'm sure that Dolphins fans would want that to be out there as well. True. But that's a little bit more understandable when it is a rookie quarterback. And actually, Trevor Lawrence was voted a captain by the Jacksonville Jaguars, so certainly not out of the realm of possibility for a rookie to be named a captain. But I would say that, you know, it's not a major concern that Tua is not a captain, but it's certainly something to look at. And I think that the way that the Dolphins used him last season, where they really used Ryan Fitzpatrick to bail him out of games last season, I wouldn't be surprised if that plays as a factor in this as well, because if they couldn't count on him to be playing 100% of games or 100% of the season last year, then maybe you don't want to count on him as a captain this season as well, given just how the team viewed him last year.
Why are you stirring this up?
It's interesting. It's interesting. Oh, look, the Patriots won
second year quarterback,
right? Why is he not a captain?
Because he's a second-year quarterback. Fitz has been in the league for 15 years.
And the Patriots ones, okay, they haven't named Mac Jones a captain either. But when you look at the list of players they have named, it's like, you know, long-term leaders of the franchise, right? It's Dante Hightower. It's David Andrews, Devin McCourty. Matthew Slater has been there since the 1950s. James White.
And the Dolphins also named longtime leaders of the Patriots franchise, just like Elandon Roberts, Jason McCourty, right? It's the same. They're naming the same, and plus Matt Collins.
Yeah.
The great Matt Collins.
I'm just saying the list of people that the Dolphins have named captains is a little bit harder to understand why your starting quarterback isn't a captain than it is with Mac Jones.
Justin Herbert, captain for the Chargers, second-year quarterback.
Look at Doug. Good job. Stir the pot, yeah. Doug. Just keep stirring it up.
I hate to do this because Dolphins fans like go at you really hard on Twitter. So I know I'm setting myself up here. But, I mean, listen, it is. It's worth at least noting.
Zach Wilson named team captain.
Oh, gosh. In the same division. Why is Mac not a captain then?
I just told you, because look at the list of people
just
on the Patriots.
There's so many Patriots way folks ahead of them. I want to talk about Mac Jones and the Patriots in a minute. They are playing the Dolphins in week one. I think, Doug, you were there for the legendary 35 for 40 performance for Mac Jones. But sure. Before we get into it, got to give a shout out to our friends over at Fantrax. Fantrax is free. Fantasy Football League Manager is the most customizable, easy to use, and feature-rich platform in the entire industry. And PFF is gearing up to play our leagues on Fantrax this season. They feature multi-team trades, bonus points for touchdowns of different yardage. If you're coming from another site, not a problem. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues completely free. You can create a free account now using promo code PFF at fantrax.com/PFF. Get a chance to win a trip to any regular season game this year for you and your entire league, plus $6,000. It's promo code PFF at fantrax.com/PFF. Mac Jones was 35 for 40 in the blistering heat. I mean, there's going to be a 30 for 30 on this joint practice someday, right? When Mac Jones wins his first Super Bowl, the day that he won the job, essentially, what was that like? What happened that day?
So I even included the one-on-one drills as well. So I had him 48 of 55, only 7 missed passes that entire practice. I guess exceptional would be a tough word to use there, but essentially before that practice, even going back a week or so, I had asked, you know, sources close to the team, you know, who's going to win this starting job? Do you think Mac Jones has a chance? And at that point, it still was, okay, Cam Newton's probably going to be the starter for this team. But then once Cam Newton went into COVID protocol, I kind of reached back out and said, listen, is there a window open for Mac Jones to win this job? And the answer was, yes, if he's good over these next 5 days, then there absolutely is. And even before that, he had been described as excellent for the Patriots through training camp. So then you go into that 5 day break where Cam Newton's out. And during one of those practices, you have Mac Jones go 48 of 55 and in competitive passes. And I'm not sure if that practice alone was the one that sealed it for Mac Jones, but he came back pretty solid in the next practice, looked good in the preseason game. I think at that point, they just said to themselves, listen, let's just do it. Let's turn it over to Mac Jones. He's been better than Cam Newton. We can probably depend on him more because of the vaccination status as our starting quarterback. And if it's close between the two, you might as well just run with a rookie quarterback if you can trust him and depend on him as much as you can, the veteran and Cam Newton. So I think that that's ultimately what did it. But I do think that those 5 days when Cam Newton was out was absolutely massive for Mac Jones. And for him to put in that performance, that it's funny. Like, we joke about it, obviously, because it is training camp stats. But really, in any setting where you're only missing 5 or 7 throws out of 40 or 50 attempts, you've had yourself a pretty good day, whether it's on a practice field, in a game, preseason game, scrimmage, anything like that.
So obviously those practice days for Mac Jones as the starter were huge in him winning the job. But do you think that they actually made that decision after that final preseason game? Because what was so weird to me was that if they had made the call before that game, they deliberately sent Mac Jones out there with the second team offense for the first time this preseason. When that happened, when he came out and the starters all left the field and Mac Jones was dealing with the second team offensive line, the second team receivers, to me, that was like a signal that this is now Cam Newton's job. They've made the decision Cam Newton's going to stay as the starter, and they're now sort of protecting things that way, that the first team is only going to play with Newton for this final game. And then obviously it comes out 24 hours later, it's the exact opposite. It's Mac Jones has been named the starter. So do you think they'd essentially had made that call that Cam Newton was going to be the starter of the team, and then Mac Jones impressed them so much with the second team that they almost like reverse course and change their mind? Or how did that dynamic play out as you understand it?
I don't think you're alone in that theory that, you know, yeah, Cam Newton was with the first team, so obviously he's the starter. I looked at it a little bit differently. And I think that what Bill Belichick and the Patriots coaching staff did was took that entire week as a whole. And they said, all right, in the first practice that we had against the Giants, Mac Jones took every single rep against the first team, 55 throws, whatever it was. And then in the second practice, I think Cam Newton was only on the field for 2 drives. Both came against the first team defense and with the first team offense. And Mac Jones took 2 or 3 drives with the first teamers as well. So then I think that they had seen enough of Mac Jones with the first team offense and against the first team defense heading into that preseason game, where they said, okay, now we can put Cam Newton out there with the first team, see how he does, see how he compared to Mac Jones over the course of the week, and then we can make our decision. So I don't think that there was a decision made before that final preseason game. I don't think that Mac Jones won it because of how he played with the second team. I just think that he was on the field with the second team because he had taken so many reps with the first team over the course of the rest of the week.
So they take the whole body of work there. They take the full body of work. And that's what I want to know here. You've seen a lot of Patriots training camps, obviously, right? So when we talk about Mac Jones in training camp, how does it stack up? Because every throw he makes is going to be compared to Brady.
I was going to say, are you asking?
Every single throw.
I'm just saying, how close is Mac Jones to Tom Brady?
This is the reality of Mac Jones' career, right? He's going to throw a 15-yard dig route. They're going to be like, oh, Brady made that throw. Look, watch Brady make that throw. They're the same guy. So you've seen Jimmy Garoppolo, and you've seen Jimmy Garoppolo in 2016 have to take starter snaps at one point. So starter reps, as far as training camp goes. I mean, you've seen the great Ryan Mallett, of course. Too. But Tom Brady. So how did Mac Jones training camp compare to, the greats, Brady, Garoppolo, and Mallett?
You know, you could throw Tim Tebow in there as well. You could throw Danny Etling in there as well. Lots of legendary quarterbacks over my time on the Patriots beat. Not as good as Brady, but I would put him up there with Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that Jimmy Garoppolo, especially entering that third year when he was going to be a starter, I'd put him, you know, around there. I actually think that Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't always as good of a player in practice as he was in game. So if you're talking strictly practice, Mac Jones might have been a little bit better than Jimmy Garoppolo. And this is going to sound a little bit wild to say, but one of the things that really impressed me about Mac Jones, especially in those joint practices against the Giants, was actually his ability to get out of the pocket, throw the ball on the move, and go off script a little bit. He was getting out of the pocket, you know, pointing at wide receivers, telling them, you know, to run to the back of the end zone, run to the corner of the end zone, throw the ball there. A lot of nonverbal communication there after the play started, after he was out of the pocket. And that's one thing that does separate him from Tom Brady, because you're not seeing Tom Brady even have that minimal amount of mobility needed to be doing those types of things. So obviously you're going to be comparing Mac Jones to Tom Brady. Tom Brady is better than Mac Jones at a million different things, but the mobility of Mac Jones has been a little bit overlooked. The guy ran a 4.8 240. You know, it's not a 4.4. It's not Justin Fields, but faster than a lot of other quarterbacks. And one thing that was really interesting before, the draft, when I was still on the Patriots beat, looking at all of these first round potential quarterbacks, is I was trying to find a 40 time for Trey Lance because he didn't run before the draft. When Mac Jones and Trey Lance were coming out of high school, Mac Jones ran a faster 40 yard dash than Trey Lance. I think it was like a 4.92 for Mac Jones, like a 4.93 or 4 or something like that for Trey Lance. And obviously Trey Lance, much better running quarterback, much better vision, much more mobile at this point. But that just does tell you that Mac Jones is not a complete statue under center, that he can actually he can at least move around in the pocket to make some plays off script.
Man, and his feel for the game. I mean, it speaks to his feel for the game too, like the athleticism to do it, but he does have a good feel. I mean, it does look like he's going to be good. And Sam, your point the whole time is that they were challenging him to start, right? I mean, and that's the other part, Doug. Did it feel like they were putting a lot on his plate? I mean, they ran no huddle right away. Yep. They put him into tough situations. You know, of course, he was forced into the day where he had to throw the ball 50 times against the ones, but, you know, it feels like they were trying to do as much as they could to either prepare him or challenge him or just make sure that he was ready to go.
I agree with that. And I think that also goes back to basically throughout training camp, Mac Jones was taking reps against the first team Patriots defense and with the Patriots first team offense. And beyond just the fact that they were putting everything on his plate, like you said, with the no huddle, I think really expanding the offense for him, just the fact that they were trusting him to take those first team reps almost right away. When you go back to Trey Lance, I'm not taking shots at Trey Lance or anything like that, but it took a really long time for the 49ers to actually start mixing Trey Lance into first team reps. So that's what told me right away that this was going to be a legitimate competition between Mac Jones and Cam Newton, Patriots training camp, and that they were going to put as much on Mac Jones' plate as possible to see if he could win the job. And obviously, ultimately, that was the case.
The measurables thing is interesting because that's, it kind of goes to what we've been saying recently, that everybody just immediately focused on the wrong things with Mac Jones. The conversation was always tilted in the wrong direction from the outset. And yet he was never actually that bad an athlete. Okay. Compared with Justin Fields and his 4.3 and the cannon for an arm and all those kinds of things. Yes. He doesn't stack up
compared with all of them,
but compared to a degree, but compared with just quarterbacks, right? Level of athlete for the position. Mac Jones is above the 50th percentile in 40, 20, 10-yard split, broad jump, you know, any of these measures of like athleticism and explosion. Whereas if you compare it to Brady, Brady is in the first percentile for 40-yard dash. He's in the zeroth percentile for vertical jump.
That's how we display it in PFF.
Brady essentially can't get off the ground when it comes to vertical jumping.
That was in 1999, though.
The second percentile for broad jump. Like, Brady is a genuinely pitiful athlete in terms of explosion.
He wasn't as pliable in his Michigan days.
Right. Now that he's been doing
he's got the band workouts going, right, and
the
stuff.
Band workouts and the plyometrics and the
avocado tequila. It just all adds up.
You reckon he's what, up to like the eighth percentile?
Definitely
now?
Eighth to 10th percentile, but like, in his 40s.
I mean, Mac Jones, he's never going to be leaning on the athleticism as like the cornerstone of his game or anything. But again, people, I think, automatically always oversold just how bad an athlete he is, which is to say not that bad.
All right, I want to wrap it up with the Niners in a minute here, but Patriots, do they look better in general with all their – they spend $500 million, all their additions, they're going to be better this year?
For sure. I mean, last year, you guys know, you had Nick Thurman playing defensive tackle. You had Terrez Hall playing linebacker. Like, they were basically at the point with injuries, opt-outs, dead cap, all of those things where they had practice players playing – you know, massive snaps on defense. Now you replace those guys with Devin Godshaw, defensive tackle, Christian Barmore, Kyle Van Noy, Dante Hightower, Josh Uche took a huge leap forward. The biggest concern there is at cornerback, because Stephon Gilmore is missing the first 6 weeks of the season on the PUP list. There's still the contract issue going on there. He's still dealing with a quad injury. And until that point, I almost don't believe my eyes about what they're going to do at the cornerback position, because we saw J.C. Jackson and Jalen Mills as their outside cornerbacks. Jonathan Jones still in the slot. Maybe they do just roll forward with Jalen Mills as an outside cornerback, but that didn't go great for the Philadelphia Eagles. That's why he was moved into the slot, into that hybrid safety role. That's the role that I expected Jalen Mills to fill on the Patriots. Now you've got a guy who's kind of undersized, kind of slow, taking on some of these wide receivers in the AFC East. I'll see how it goes. The other options there aren't that much better, though. They brought in Sean Wade from the Baltimore Ravens, but he's probably better in the slot than he is outside. Jawan Williams has been not the greatest second-round pick from 2019. He's really struggled to find the field and looks like a guy who's better suited to cover tight ends and bigger wide receivers. So we'll see what they do. This game against Miami, not to get too deep into a week one matchup, is interesting to me because of the wide receivers that the Dolphins have. I would not be shocked. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm not saying that I've seen this or heard this, but would it make sense, at least for one game, to move Jonathan Jones actually outside, where he might be facing guys like Jalen Waddle, where he might be facing guys like Jakeem Grant or Albert Wilson, guys who aren't those prototypical, you know, tall wide receivers that you'd usually see on the outside. It might just be some stop and go early in the season for the Patriots as they figure out how to move forward without Stephon Gilmore for those first 6 weeks of the season.
That's why
overall much better.
They'll be much better. And I do wonder if that ends up being a scheme change for them as well. I mean, they've played as much man coverage as any team in the league. We've talked about that quite a bit here as well,
for sure.
But it's not like Belichick hasn't played zone heavy. I mean, he's done it all. He's played zone heavy defenses when his personnel dictates it. Yep. On paper, the personnel might dictate, hey, let's take a little bit off the corners plates right now, especially if Gilmore isn't back, you know, for a while. Yeah. Sam went and made a very bold Super Bowl take that is locked and set in stone. Sam, take it away. Let's see how good your Super Bowl pick's going to be here.
I said that the Washington football team were going to win the Super Bowl, and that Fitzmagic would take them to the NFC Championship game before Taylor Heinicke took them the rest of the way.
What a very specific prediction.
Yeah, yeah. Full Joe Flacco followed by full Nick Foles, essentially, was how that was going to break down.
What a year it's going to be here in 2021. So what? How'd the football team, how did the future Super Bowl champ football
and
then, team?
By the way, at that point, they're going to be locked in to being the Washington football team. Today on Adam Schefter's podcast, it was like 8 finalists of names that they've settled on, rebranding. The Washington football team is still one of the 8.
And if you win a Super Bowl.
If you win a Super Bowl with that, you can't go away from it. You can't then rebrand the Red Wolves or whatever. You're stuck with it. Now you are the Washington football team from here on out. So that's the prediction.
How say you?
I kind of like the Washington football team. I actually kind of like that name in general. I think it's fine to refer to a team as the football team. It does make them hard to write about. But overall, I'd say that I spent a good chunk of time there in Washington as well, watching their practice. The offense wasn't really firing on all cylinders that day. The defense definitely looked quite a bit ahead of the offense. That being said, Curtis Samuel was not on the field. That being said, Curtis Samuel still is not really fully back on the field. So could take a while for him to get back in the mix. But Terry McLaurin definitely set to have a big year, like what they did at wide receiver. I think overall, that offense could be an offense that really starts clicking midway through the season if Ryan Fitzpatrick can look like Ryan Fitzmagic rather than, you know, the up and down player that we've seen throughout the years. But really the big thing there is on defense. I think their defense is set to have a really big year. Jamin Davis there in the middle of their defense is someone that Washington football team is really, really, really impressed with. I think that he'll be a day one impact player there. Big linebacker who can move really well. I know that the coaches really like him. And then obviously just that front seven in general should be the strength of that team overall. Some slight questions, I'd say, in the secondary, especially at cornerback, but obviously any team is going to have some questions. Not quite sure about Super Bowl favorites, but I could certainly see WFT being a playoff team again this season.
There you go. I mean, they have all the pieces, Sam.
Yeah. The prediction is clearly, you know, a little bit out there when you're talking about a full Flacco followed by a full Foles to make it happen. It's probably not, you know, one for the odds makers. But I am interested that they still seem to be quite heavy underdogs in terms of odds just to win their own division. Like most people still have Dallas out there as the clear favorite. To me, it's much closer than that. It's almost a toss up between those two. And of the two, I would lean Washington.
I agree with that. I think that it should be closer. Obviously, the big thing is just you go back to the quarterbacks and Dak is just so much better than Ryan Fitzpatrick. Obviously, he has to stay healthy, already dealt with the shoulder injuries this summer. But if it is close, I think that you give the edge to the quarterback. But I would say that Washington definitely has a better overall constructed roster than Dallas does.
Right.
All right, let's wrap it up with this. In all of your travels, I'll put you on the spot a little bit, but in all your travels, anything else, anything broad that stood out or themes or any other newsworthy items from all your travels across training camp?
That's a good question. I definitely think that the Chargers are another team obviously to watch this season. That depends on Justin Herbert.
By the hype.
But I mean, Justin Herbert, you really just like his mentality. He's a different type of quarterback. And even beyond the great story that Mina Kimes wrote about him, he's a guy who I think is really hard on himself, but it's a motivational tool that really works for him. And that's kind of what you hear around Los Angeles is that he is a different type of player. He's maybe a little bit more introverted than most quarterbacks are, but it works for him. And it obviously worked for him last year. I wrote a story on Josh Palmer. I'm expecting big things out of the rookie wide receiver there with the Los Angeles Chargers. And one other stop that I made was just with the Baltimore Ravens. And I would say that once everything comes together, And who knows if it will all at the same time, but if Rashad Bateman can be healthy at the same time as Sammy Watkins, at the same time as Hollywood Brown, I actually think that has a chance to be a pretty good pass catching unit for Baltimore. It hurts that J.K. Dobbins is out for the season. But you know, you throw in Mark Andrews in there as well. I actually think that they've built enough there at wide receiver and tight end to make Lamar Jackson succeed more as a passer than he did last season. So I'm pretty high on Lamar Jackson once that wide receiver core comes together, but from what we saw over the summer, who knows if that will all gel all at the same time, just because of all the injuries that those guys dealt with over the course of training camp.
And that was my Super Bowl pick, right? Is that who I chose on the last show? As opposed to the other times I've made Super Bowl picks?
Yeah, probably.
I think on the last show, my Super Bowl pick was Bucks and Ravens. And maybe even on Twitter. Like, I might have even picked this twice. So there we go. My Super Bowl pick.
By the way, as much as we think of Dak Prescott as being a dramatically better quarterback than Ryan Fitzpatrick, since the start,
of course you did.
Since the start of 2018, Dak Prescott's PFF grade, 84.0, ranks 15th in the NFL. Ryan Fitzpatrick's PFF grade, 83.2, ranks 16th, one after the other, basically in the same place.
The only problem is Fitzpatrick played a lot of football before 2018, and that's still a part of the evaluation.
No, it's all gone. It's done now.
Fitz has been
water under the bridge.
Take out just his two
that
games.
Was pre-magic.
Take out the two ridiculous week one games in 2018.
That was pre-magic. That was just Fitzpatrick. Now he's okay. Fitzmagic. He's a different player.
He's full magic now. Yeah. Last question, Doug. What happened to the Washington Huskies this weekend?
Oh my God. I wanted to tweet about it, but I was like, I don't want to set myself up for I mean, that was just absolutely insane. They need to figure out what they're doing at quarterback. I'm not a Dylan Morris guy. I think that they need to turn it over to the legendary bloodline of Sam Heward. It's time to roll with Sam Heward.
Okay. So he wants to make a quarterback change over there in Washington.
Yeah.
The Washington guy.
Uh-huh.
Got it.
You know? This is the PFF NFL podcast.
Right. I know.
Got the helmet somewhere up here. Washington helmet. Yeah.
Mark Brunell. We're just Mark Brunell fans here.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. Well, Doug,
I've actually got a Mark Brunell starting lineup back here. In my
I did too over here at the office, and he like lost a leg and an arm and all, lost in construction. It was rough.
Mine's a University of Washington one though, not Jaguars.
Rose Bowl MVP.
He's a man that got beat up in his playing days as well. So
he did. Mark, he took like 60 sacks.
It's just more authentic now.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, Doug, thanks for joining us. We'll have you back for sure. Go check out all of Doug's work over at pff.com. What's the Twitter handle as well?
It is Doug Kide. I'm keeping it simple.
A-Y-E-D, Doug Kide. All right, buddy. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks to Cousin Doug for joining the show. Cousin a little family Doug. Affair here.
Yeah.
It's good.
You don't want to lean on that too much. People don't like the nepotism angle. Now, it's important
to
emphasize.
It was funny when we didn't work together.
It's important to emphasize just how far apart the connection of the two of you are.
Like, we're not really cousins.
What did he say? It was second cousins-in-law or something, as if that's a thing?
Right.
It just means you know each other.
That's why I try to lay it out. Maybe. When I say my wife's stepmom, right? I mean, that immediately, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big leap right away.
And then it's her cousin's daughter's husband. I mean, it's a long way away. That's why it's more fun. It's fun. We're just having fun here. I will say it's nice to have a little national beat writer feel that we've added to PFF and get a little extra insight to either confirm things that we had considered or hear, you know, new takes on just what's happening at the various training camps and everything. So a nice little angle to have Doug. Maybe we'll have him a little bit more during the season as well as the newsy stuff picks up.
Speaking of the season,
it's the football season. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to try this out. We're going to do our Thursday night game preview here on the Wednesday show.
Yeah.
On our midweek show. So we're going to preview Bucks and
because otherwise we don't get to it on the basis that the game has happened by the time you
listen
to
it. Yeah,
we
usually roll through it quickly on the Thursday preview show. So tomorrow's show, Thursday show, we're going to go through each game. We'll give you something to watch on each game. We'll go a little bit longer on some of the bigger games, of course. But we usually touch on the Thursday night show and we say stuff like, oh, you've already seen it. A lot of you have already listened to, you know, seen the game as you listen to the podcast. We'll give you a little bit more time.
Yeah. Get your game now we can actually predict and won't be wrong, but by the time you listen to it, unless you're listening to it late.
Yeah, and you still might be listening to the Wednesday show on a Friday, but
we might still be wrong, but at least there's been some time for you to listen to it beforehand.
All right, so what do you expect? What are you looking for in this Bucks Cowboys game? Bucks favored by about 8 last time I checked. We'll get that final number here as of right now in a minute.
As of right now in a minute
when I look it up, but
it is 8.
It's been 8. Okay, there we go.
This is going to be interesting because obviously the big sort of story heading into the game, it's all Dallas, right? It's Dak Prescott's first action since his devastating injury. Sorry, I'm laughing because I was trying to figure out a way of stitching in the Tony Romo commentary to it, and I couldn't come up with one on the fly. For
Tony
anyone,
misread his injury a little bit.
A lot. It's maybe the most funny piece of announcing slash commentary I've ever seen in my world.
Poor Dak's ankle's fallen off.
Right. Poor Dak wrecks his ankle, like broken, obviously down and done for not just the day, but like long term. Bad injury. Guys on the floor trying to like, I mean, he was saying it, I think on Hard Knocks or wherever it was, that he, like his initial thing was to just like pop it back into place and then get to the sideline and get off, right? But he didn't realize that it was, wasn't attached anymore. You can't just like pop it back. So poor Dak's busy like fumbling with his foot, trying to attach it back onto his leg. And Tony Romo is busy saying, you just got to hope it's cramped, Jim. It's not cramped, Tony. I can tell you that for sure. I'm no doctor over here, but I promise you it's not cramp. Anyway, this is the first time since the not cramp injury that Dak Prescott's going to be on the field because they kept him out of preseason. He was dealing with the nicked up shoulder. And now he's dealing with an offensive line that's banged up as well. Zach Martin is out for the game on the COVID list. Has he been officially out yet? There was talk that they were like readying the jet that they could fly him in morning of. If he
right now, I think they're trying to do negative tests. So he still could make it with negative
tests. So probably out is how I would phrase
Lyle
that.
Lyle Collins, it sounds like, is going to play at right tackle.
Yes, which is just as well because Ty Nsekhe's also questionable. So all of a sudden, this Dallas offensive line that's obviously been the strength of this team for years is looking a little bit weak up the middle. It's not looking great in terms of the tackles unless both those sort of injury-prone and or recently injured tackles bounce back immediately to their very best. And you've got a quarterback who hasn't really taken a snap in anger since, you know, week five last year.
And so that's the big story from a Dallas standpoint. The other big story is Tampa Bay rolling everybody back to defend their title. As of record time, you've got Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown, both listed as questionable with quad and a knee. I think quad for Chris Godwin, a knee for Antonio Brown. That was unexpected because there were no real injury issues with Tampa Bay. Jermaine Whitehead's out in the secondary, but they're deep enough that it's not a huge deal, I don't think, there. But if the Bucs lose either of those playmakers, it's not that they don't have other guys to throw to, but that part of their advantage is like, hey, go cover these three receivers and these three tight ends and good luck.
Right. I mean, if they lose
any of that advantage, you know, you got to feel a little bit better as a Cowboys fan.
Right. But even if they lost both of them, you would have to rely on the paltry receiving options of your three quality tight ends, Mike Evans, Scotty Miller, you know, Tyler Johnson steps up maybe, like, you're still okay.
And the Bucs did that last year. They had last year, Mike Evans played banged up quite a bit. Chris Godwin was banged up at various points in the year. Antonio Brown missed a playoff game as well. I mean, they were always in and out. OJ Howard missed the majority of the season. So I'm looking forward to seeing how aggressive the Bucs are, right? You have a whole offseason of all these playmakers and all that. Do they just try to go nuts and, you know, forget establishing the run and the early down runs and a lot of the stuff they did last year? It's year two of Brady in the system. Are they just going to attack? And are they going to look at a Dallas secondary that looks vulnerable? New system, yeah, it's going to look a little different than last year. But Anthony Brown, Trayvon Diggs, and Jordan Lewis coming off of years 54, 62, 48 PFF grades, not great. Do the Bucs just look at the secondary and say, all right, we're going to attack like crazy?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely possible. The Dallas defense right now, we expect to be significantly better this year on the basis that it couldn't be much worse. And we talked before about how just the change to a new system and to a new coach should pay dividends by simplifying things, by getting everybody on the same page. On the other hand, it is like the glaring weakness from a year ago. So if you're starting off and you're Tampa Bay, that's where you're going to be attacking first and foremost. But they were also so incredibly weak up front that you're not going to be scared away from just pounding the ball right at them either. So I think, I mean, that's the real matchup heading into this game is, yeah, Dallas's offense suddenly looks like they're up against it a little bit because Dak's coming back from injury and because the offensive line looks weaker. But the bigger question is, like, can they even stop the Bucs scoring to let that offense have a chance? I mean, If this was a matchup last year, you would be saying it's just a shootout. It's Dallas's offense putting up. It's right. Like the first month for Dallas last year was all of that. It was the offense putting up insane numbers of points and yards, but the team wasn't necessarily running away with these games and they were struggling to win them because the defense was giving up just as much. That's how I would expect this game to look if everything was healthy on the Dallas offense, but all of a sudden that part is starting to wobble.
I want to see how Dan Quinn takes over as defensive coordinator, and does his scheme look like it did before, which was a lot of straight up cover three, cover one, Seattle-ish type of stuff, which Brady generally does well against, and which the Bucs and their offense generally do well against. So the matchup doesn't look good for Dallas, but here's what I think could make it look good. If Micah Parsons, who again, Renner last week at this time on the Wednesday show said, Micah Parsons is looking great. Agreed, you know, playing fast. If he, the investment that the Cowboys have made at linebacker, if that pays off, right, with Micah Parsons, with getting Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch playing fast, or Keanu Neal, however that rotation looks, if those guys are playing fast, taking away the middle of the field, which they need to do in that defense, that could throw a little wrinkle in there if the Cowboys just really upgrade in the middle of the field in spots where they were weak last year.
Just from the preseason, 60% of Dallas's defensive snaps were either cover three or cover one, 15% cover two. So like, they're leaning into that Dan Quinn defense.
And the Bucs are going to run four verts over and over again, and Brady's going to go through, and he's got, whether all the receivers are out there or not, he's got great options, right? A lot of times their four vert package, it could be O.J. Howard and Gronk on the same side. It can be Scotty Miller in there, as you mentioned, as a legitimate deep threat. And if Scotty Miller, it gets one-on-one with Anthony Brown or with Trayvon Diggs, maybe not as much because of his size, but Anthony Brown or Jordan Lewis, that's a speed mismatch for Scotty. So they'll probably try to take a shot here and there. I think the Bucs certainly have the offensive advantage, unless I think the Cowboys get some incredible play at the linebacker position or up front, with DeMarcus Lawrence rushing off the edge. But on the other side, the Bucs, part of what made the Bucs good last year is their young secondary coming together as well. Dallas is going to challenge them with their three top receivers. Yeah. So that's why we're expecting a shootout, because Dallas can move the ball, Tampa Bay can move the ball. But I think that matchup with, the Bucs secondary against the Dallas receiving core is going to be a good one as well.
That's the sort of big X factor in this season for Tampa Bay. Yes, running it back with everybody, including the assistant coaches, is a great thing. And we expect generally that so much actually went against Tampa Bay last year that there's a huge conceivable way they could be a better team this season than last season. But the one area where it could all unravel quickly is the secondary, not because they don't have talented players, but just because that's the nature of secondary play. As much as most of those guys played well last season, it wouldn't take much for two or three of them to be not great this year, and all of a sudden that secondary is actually kind of porous and an area of weakness without any real way of like fixing it. You know what I mean? It's just sometimes that's the way coverage works, and you're going to suffer the downswing of variance. And it's just a weak area of your team that we don't like on paper right now. It's not a weakness. It doesn't, it looks fine. It looks like the rest of this roster, which is to say one of the better in the NFL, certainly no weak link here. But it wouldn't take much for you to be looking at this in week eight and say, Tampa Bay is this great roster, but the Achilles heel, the thing that's going to keep them from repeating, is these two or three guys that are underachieving in the secondary right now.
And the thing is, when the Bucs, again, they were a good defense last year. Everybody remembers an elite performance in the Super Bowl, right? They got picked apart at times. Generally, it was underneath stuff, right? They would play some soft zone with Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean and Sean Murphy bunting. And I think Dallas can play that game, play the quick passing game, have patience with their receivers. I said on the daily, I think it's a Dak game. I think you're going to be, running into a brick wall against that Tampa Bay defensive front, especially if Zach Martin is injured.
Yeah.
Even if he's there, I don't know if you want to run the ball a ton if you're Dallas. But it's spread it out, short passing game. If you're Dallas, put the ball in Dak's hands and let him throw the ball 40 or 50 times and try to light up the scoreboard, but do it in a patient way, because I think the Bucs will give you opportunities to put together some big drives.
How do you think Dak's going to look first game back?
I think he'll look fine. I mean, I keep coming back to the shoulder injury stuff, and I think it's something you can zap it with rehab and get rid of it if it really is just like a little, inflammation or whatever it is. Other times it can nag at you. And if he's been on a pitch count, again, like throwing a football is not like throwing a baseball, or it's not as taxing on your arm. So I think arm-wise, I think he'll be okay. Rust-wise, I think the thing to look at is just pocket presence, right? I mean, it's not it's not a Joe Burrow injury where Joe Burrow got hurt in the pocket.
Yeah.
And might be a little gun shy in there, but you still want to just see Dak, you know, take a hit and maneuver the pocket and all that stuff. And if once he does that, I think he'll be fine. I think he'll look good.
Yeah. There probably is a difference between like hurting yourself like that, just out scrambling around, just a freak, you know, the way the body's collapsed on you versus getting, you know, getting collapsed the way Joe Burrow did in the pocket as a sort of natural occupational hazard of playing football. That you can see how mentally, even if the knee felt okay, you would start to react to pressure more. Whereas if it's just like, you know, I was running around and when the body's collapsed, this is how it went, it feels like that would be easier to get over.
Yeah, and I keep mentioning the shoulder because I'm not concerned about Dak's ankle that much, right? I'm concerned about the shoulder because it kind of popped up and it kept him out of camp for a little bit. And it, to me, that's like the bigger thing that could, you know, that could derail the game. But I think Dak looks fine. I think Dallas moves the ball a little bit. Ultimately, I like the Bucs to win, and I think they'd cover eight. I could see them covering eight. If all their receivers are healthy, I see them covering eight. The benefit of being the Bucs and having that roster, the one preseason game we saw their starters, Chris Godwin was the guy. I think Mike Evans is going to have a big year. You know, I think Antonio Brown, if any of those three led the team in receiving yards, would you be surprised? No. I mean, that's right. So in any given game, any of those guys could go crazy. And I think it's just a matter of how they play, and having those options, I think, just always gives Tampa Bay the advantage.
Yeah. I think my big concern is just whether the interior of that offensive line for Dallas can hold up against Vita Vea and those kinds of things. They're going to get overmatched up front, and they're probably going to need to hang with Tampa Bay in a shootout. So yeah, I'm with you. I think they probably do cover.
All right, so we're both taking the Bucs. It's our Thursday night game preview. Don't forget, you get all of our green line, so all of our odds on the games. If you're still drafting for fantasy, you need nothing else but PFF. So we actually still have 30% off, kickoff 30, kickoff 30, 30% off. Anything over at PFF from a subscription standpoint for all your new subscribers. So go check it out, pff.com. It's kickoff 30. We'll be back tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Previewing every single game. Week one, baby. Made it. Week one. So tune in tomorrow. We'll preview all the games in this weekend's action. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. See you tomorrow.